Good afternoon. Delighted to be here, and particularly delighted to talk about this population. Is this working? Not moving forward.
Yes,
one. All right. I told you I was a technological disaster. I do not have any disclosures or conflict of interest. This work was supported by the National Cancer Institute through an R21 mechanism. As I said, I'm particularly delighted to be able to address this particular population given the theme of APHA this year, prevention and wellness across the lifespan. If there is any subpopulation at greater risk of not being attended to in terms of prevention or in supporting wellness through their adult life, it certainly would be the adult survivors of childhood cancer. Who are they? One out of every 640 adults aged 20 to 39 years of age is a survivor of pediatric malignancy. The certainly internationally famous childhood cancer survivor study, of the current 10,000 participants, 44% of those folks are at least 40 years of age and older. A little over 7% are older than 51 years. So that is proof positive that this population is living longer and in no way compares to what the cure rates were 30 and 40 years ago. The bad news is that, unfortunately, they must live with the impact of their cancer therapy, even though they may be 30, 40, 50 years out from that therapy. Therapy has a definite impact physically, psychologically, socially, economically, and even existentially. And as our moderator indicated, my work the last 11 years has been devoted to doing or developing and testing behavioral interventions that are directed at preventing morbidity and mortality in this group. And within the last 3 to 4 years, I thought I'd take a little bit different turn and say, okay, now we know what works. How do we adjust the healthcare system in such a way that the interventions we've developed can be absorbed and implemented? So being an old public health nurse, as I am, I thought, well, we'll simply look at the health-related needs assessments that have been done on this population, and to my surprise, there essentially were none. I've put a few up here so you could see authors and years that these things were done, but by and large, we're talking about very limited needs assessment. There would be psychologists who would deal with psychological welfare, cognitive impairment. You'd have social workers who would assess unmet needs from a standpoint of service utilization, but you had nothing that was out there in the literature that even began to resemble a comprehensive health-related needs assessment. Those that were there had very limited assessment of the instrumentation or the measures. They were based on convenience sample. Given that, there certainly was underrepresentation of minority groups. And don't even bring up the subject of rural populations or survivors living in rural areas. And there was not a single survivor in any of these needs assessment that was older than 40 years. So, says I, wasn't exactly in my life plan for my research trajectory, but in order to move forward, somebody had to develop an instrument that would allow us to do comprehensive health-related needs assessment. So I thought the best model would be to look at the literature from adult cancer survivors. And indeed, there was a sizable literature out there. 57 studies had made some attempt to quantify unmet health-related needs. Out of those, my research group culled 9 instruments. Good Cronbox Alpha, we had certain criteria that we wanted to apply to see if any of these instruments might be a base for what we wanted to develop. You can see Cronbox there. They had to have strong evidence of face, content, construct, validity. acceptable completion times. I didn't want one of those instruments where it takes a half day to have the survivor completed. Reading levels between fourth and eighth grade. And we applied the criteria of the instrument had to have been used in at least three studies, that it was not one of these sort of shot in the dark, used once and then forgotten. Given that, we were able to identify 17 separate domains, which you see identified on the slide. We had to develop some things that obviously were not appropriate for adult cancer survivors, and they were specific to survivors of pediatric malignancy. So we used some of our own subscales that we'd done in other studies and put them into the mix. So 17 domains represented by 190 items. Now, it certainly was not my intent to have a 190-item instrument, but we thought, given that number of items, we certainly would be able to find enough items that would give us a suitable bank. Who was our sample? We relied on the Childhood Cancer Survivor Study, those current participants. We wanted our participants to be 25 years of age and older. Ideally, assuming that they would be relatively independent and on their own. We could not have patients who were treated at St. Jude, my own institution, participate in the study because the financial options for continuing care are very different at St. Jude. And they would have reported need levels or not reported need levels that would have been consistent with the other 26 institutions across Canada and the U.S., so we ruled our own group of survivors out. For this first time out of the box, I wanted the survivors not to be cognitively impaired because I wanted survivor responses and not parent, guardian, or spouse responses for this first assessment. We stratified the sample by age, gender, and diagnosis and ended up with a sample of 1,430 randomly selected survivors. Now, we oversampled minority groups, particularly African Americans and Hispanics, by a 2-to-1 ratio, and we did the same for rural dwelling survivors. I was delighted with our response. We had 1,178 questionnaires with complete data return. Our target sample was 1,000 in order to do the analytic procedures we had in mind. Particularly happy about the age breakdown. 41% of the sample was 42 years of age or older. Predominantly female, which is what you can expect in basically a male survey, no matter what the diagnosis. The sample was a little wider than I had hoped for. We were shooting for around 80 or 81% to represent essentially the demographic parallels of pediatric cancer, and we ended up with 89%. Most were married or partnered, and the highest percentage of survivors had been diagnosed between the ages of 10 and 20 years, followed very closely by those diagnosed between 0 and 4 years. Well-educated, certainly large majority, had a bachelor's degree or higher, and at least half of the sample, slightly over half of the sample, were making between $60,000 and $100,000 to over $100,000 a year. We subjected the entire instrument. Now, don't get nervous. I promise this is not really a psychometric talk. But we subjected the entire instrument to confirmatory factor analysis and indeed got support for our 17 domains. It's exactly what our CFA turned up. The subscales, Cronbach's alpha, ranged between 0.94 and 97, so that certainly made us happy. We did ask 122 of our respondents to retake the instrument. However, we mixed up the order of the questionnaire, so they were not really responding to exactly the same instrument as before, and they had to actually read the items again. 8 out of what became 9 scales ended up having a test retest of between 0.75 and 91. One scale was at 0.52. Criteria for acceptable test retest on group data is 0.50, so we barely made it on that one, and I'll discuss that the reasons why it was lower at the end of the presentation. Well, we went one step further and used item response theory, and I'm happy to talk to anybody who wants to talk about IRT and Roche modeling because it is a wonderful tool. But I like it so much I can get in sort of a do loop and we'd never get through this presentation. But in terms of the parameters of the items, this looks at every single item. We're no longer talking about subscales, but item by item by item. Item reliability was 0.97 to 0.99. Person reliability, 0.80 to 0.90. These are interpreted much like Cronbach's alpha. And then separation index scores says how well are you able to measure the health-related needs on a given subscale. Are you hitting it at, are you getting endorsement of high-level needs, medium-level needs, and low-level needs based on the items you have, and you want those scores to be somewhere between 1.75 and 4.0, and we were delighted with a 2 to 3. We ended up with 9 domains because by the time we rejected items that did not meet our IRT criteria, obviously that meant a reshuffle of items. Some of our items, like sexuality, nutrition, transportation, finance, simply did not compute as part of this overall assessment. And again, I'll explain why at the end of the talk. And just to give you some idea of what these needs assessment questions look like, on the left-hand side are commonly endorsed items. The first one is the psycho-emotional subscale, and a very commonly endorsed item was help dealing with worry. By contrast, a very uncommonly endorsed item, but yet a very strong item in terms of performance with help, was help with loss of control over emotions. Now remember, we're measuring needs. We're not trying to diagnose depression or anxiety or psychosis, but what are the need levels on a psycho-emotional level? And the rest of those, in the interest of time, you can read yourself. Importantly, under general health, commonly endorsed was help with feeling tired, and we know that that is an ongoing problem in adult survivors, no matter how many years out of therapy they are, compared to siblings or control groups. But in terms of doing lighthouse work and preparing meals, that was very seldom endorsed, but still an important item. Same thing, same format with coping. Survivors very much endorsed the need to talk to someone who understands what the survivor experience is all about. On the other hand, they did not endorse at a high level being helped to make their life count. That was a much more existential item. That's not to say no one endorsed it, but it certainly was not commonly endorsed. Now, what were the issues that were related to having high levels of unmet needs? Anybody who is 40 years of age or over, all of these are significant at a p-value of 0.001 or below. Being female, in contrast to being male. Having less than a college education, making less than $59,999K. Not living with a spouse or partner. None of these things are surprising, but we were delighted to be able to pick them up with the instrument. In terms of disease and treatment factors associated with having higher level needs, those who were diagnosed between the ages of 10 and 20 years had much higher level needs than did those who were diagnosed at younger age. One reason being, this is the age when osteosarcoma, bone malignancies present, and it's certainly the age when we see Hodgkin lymphoma. Radiation was a culprit in having higher level needs, whether it was alone or in combination with chemotherapy. And again, all significant at 0.001. So what has this given us? Well, we certainly know from having done this that we need to document the needs of aging survivors. Providers are not in the habit of much going beyond presenting symptomatology, whether it's a community-based clinic or primary care. If the patient does not themselves report certain health-related needs, they are not attended to. This instrument would give us the ability to compare and contrast unmet needs in different population segments, which we think is very important. We've just begun those analyses. Finally, application to practice. We can use this to inform a continuing care resource or diary. We certainly can use it to triage survivors to appropriate services. Limitations? You've already heard them. Racial, ethnic skew of the sample. Half of our non-respondents were male. And certainly you could point your finger at us and say, well, you chose the item, so there's selection bias here. And I would argue that collectively, we have over 70 years of clinical and research experience with this population. We broadly defined our domains, and we allowed for open-ended questions that would let survivors say whether or not they felt there were needs that we had not addressed in this needs assessment. You do nothing alone. This is my research team. Everybody is from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, except for Dr. Barth Riley, and Barth is an expert in item response theory at University of Illinois at Chicago. Thank you.